You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Indiana Pacers give their fans a scare, keep their eyes glued on the TV, and their hearts racing as they pull this one out, 98-95 over the Washington Wizards after Bradley Beal misses a three with under 3 seconds left. Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am a co-host of the Locked On Pacers podcast and a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com. What a game. The Pacers barely win this one. They held the lead the entire game. Washington never had a lead, but yet, coming down in the last minute, one possession game all the way through. Nice defensive plays by Victor Oladipo and Corey Joseph to stop Bradley Beal, who went 0-for-3 in the last 30 seconds of the game. I don't know what else to say. The Pacers just barely pulled this one out. To start today's podcast, I'm going to hit a couple quick data points. First one is 22 of 24. I teased it a little bit in my quick open. The Pacers shot 22 of 24 from the free throw line. They made their first 20 free throws before missing two free throws late. The Pacers once again made it closer than it had to be at the end of the game. Up 96-95, Victor Oladipo gets fouled. He goes 1-for-2 at the line. Washington comes right back down. Bradley Beal goes into the lane, misses a jumper. Rebound Corey Joseph. He then goes 1-for-2 at the line, making it 98-95, getting Washington one more shot to win the game. Of course, Bradley Beal misses the three, and that's the game. But the free throw stat shows one important thing about the Pacers, and that was they continued to be aggressive and get to the rim, and they were rewarded for it. Victor Oladipo shot 10 free throws and was rewarded for every time he took the ball to the rim. He either made his layup or got fouled, it seemed like. He was rewarded by the refs for being aggressive, which is what you want to see out of this team that likes to play extremely fast. Also, the free throw stat was the decider in this game. The Pacers basically tied or lost every other statistical category to the Wizards. If you look at it, they won the rebounding battle by one rebound. They shot less three-pointers and had a worse three-point field goal percentage. They won the field goal percentage by 1%. So it was like basically even all the way except at the free throw line, where the Pacers took 24 free throws and made 22 of them for a 91% efficiency. The Wizards were 15 of 19, which is 7 less made free throws, and they only shot about 78% from three. This was an incredible game for the Pacers to get this win because it pushes them into the 4 seed, which is important, and it helps kind of erase the early week woes. The next data point I had was Bradley Beal, who shot 8 of 27. Now, this is the second game in a row the Pacers have shut down an all-star on the opposing team. Giannis on Friday shot 6 of 18. Again, the Pacers are somehow, either it's the best team's opposing player is just missing his shots, but I think it's more the Pacers' defense. Thad Young did a great job on Friday on Giannis. This time it was the combination of Corey Joseph and Victor Oladipo. At the end of game, Bradley Beal shot 0 from 3 in the last 30 seconds. He had 3 chances to either take the lead, tie the game, or win the game, and he continued to keep missing. So it was an incredible job by both Victor, who covered him the first time, who blocked his shot at the rim, and then Corey Joseph, who stopped him late and then got the rebound. The next data point I had was probably the most disappointing data point, minus 16. Lance Stephenson with a minus 16 on his plus-minus box score. That follows up a minus 20 earlier in the week against Dallas. Yes, Lance played decent against Atlanta and against Milwaukee, but that's 2 of 4 games where Lance was just unplayable. If you watch Lance, basically he was the reason the Pacers blew their 13-point leads they had at the end of going into the second quarter and going into the fourth quarter. He was either too aggressive on offense and not hitting a shot, not willing to make the pass. I mean, the offense looked stagnant with the ball in his hands the entire time. It was really just frustrating. It's the same thing you saw against Dallas. Lance is also disengaged on defense, letting guys beat him because he's watching the ball too much. Just all the little things, but really one of the best things I saw was iPacers blog tweeted, you know, Lance's battery was drained from not being at home. When he goes home, he recharges. So all the stuff he's had, yeah, it's bad, but once again, Lance at home is an incredible player. His difference on scoring at home versus the road is unbelievable. I think it's 11 points a game at home versus 6 on the road, so hopefully they return home Monday, get to recharge his home battery, and that will, you know, get him back in the groove because they did play 4 straight road games, which is it's just difficult for him. He's just not a good road player. I don't know what it is. It's really frustrating to watch because it's worrisome when it comes to playoff time because if he is not engaged on the road which they're probably not going to be one of the top four seeds. I mean, I know right now they're in the four seed, but they're probably not going to be. They have to play four road games if they want to win. Probably have to win a road game, and if he's disengaged, it's going to be really, really bad. And hopefully, really, GR3 can somehow, in the next 20 games, keep pushing himself up and take over Lance's minutes. But that's another thing for another day. A couple things I've noticed from today's game. The first really big one was the play of Bojan Bogdanović. Earlier this season, I said the Pacers really had yet to find their number two scoring option to Vic. The Robin to Victor Oladipo's Batman on the offensive end. I think defensively, they're fine. They got the combination of Turner and Thad Young, who have been incredible. Thad Young deflection, I think, is first in the NBA, and Miles Turner is somewhere in the leading blocks, top five, whatever you want to say. It changes every few days, but he's climbing up the blocks leading. And I know there's a credible stat where Miles Turner is one of, like, five players to have 90 blocks and 43s in a season. It's incredible, but that's for another day. On the offensive end, Bojan, over the last, since basically the start of February, has finally established himself, it seemed like, as Victor Oladipo's number two offensive wingman. You know, Darren Collison might have something to say about it when he comes back, but we'll worry about that later. So over since February, Bojan has had seven games of 18 or more, and is averaging 18.4 points. Tonight he had 20 points, and he was awesome. He was critical down the stretch. He had an incredible three over Bradley Beal to really, I think it made the score 87-81. You know, the game had tightened up. The bench had blown the lead. The starters came back in. It was getting kind of tight, and it was kind of the time for the Victor Oladipo pick and roll play, and which wasn't really effective. But Bojan got a nice little three in the corner, and boom, he nailed it. The one thing I like to see about Bojan is he seems still afraid to shoot free throws at the end of games. I don't know what it is. It might just be he doesn't think he should take them. I don't know if he's nervous, whatever it is. But he really needs to be more aggressive at the end of games with just holding the ball at the end of games to get fouled, because he is their best free throw shooter. Yes, Vic is their clutch time guy, but Vic is, as we've seen just for the past almost really the past two games, he's a shaky end of game free throw shooter where he goes one of two a lot, misses both. I mean, like, you know, for all his greatness at the end of games, his free throw shooting is not, like, incredible. I know he's an 80-something percent on the season, but Bojan's a better free throw shooter, at least it seems. Maybe not the end of games, but I'd rather the Bojan be shooting free throws than Victor Oladipo, because Bojan's the more pure shooter. But overall, I think Bojan has really brought himself in as Victor Oladipo's wingman. Now, is that sustainable is the question. I don't know. You know, Bojan played really good in October, November, and parts of December, and then hit a huge slump basically at the end of December through January. He's got it back again. Hopefully he can keep it up throughout March. They're going to need him. If, you know, they're going to have any shot at getting the three seed in the Eastern Conference, it's going to be because Bojan has a lot of 20-point games. He's averaging over 18 points a game as Victor Oladipo's number two scorer. But I don't know what to tell you. It's a 50-50 shot in my opinion. You know, Bojan could hit a rough patch once again, and this would all be for nothing. But he could just keep it going, and if he does, that'd be awesome. And it means the Pacers team's probably going to win 45 to 48 games. The next thing I really noticed was, I talked about it earlier, was the pace and Victor Oladipo just constantly going to the rim. He was rewarded for it. He had 10 free throws. You know he's going to the rim a lot when he shoots 10 free throws. It's kind of the James Harden thing where James Harden goes to the rim a lot and draws fouls. You know a player is being aggressive when they get fouled and they shoot free throws. But also it was Vic playing the point guard spot. You know, it's something that we're, as Pacer fans, going to have to get accustomed to in the future. Vic could be the starting point guard for the Pacers. You know, he doesn't always need to have the ball in his hand to be effective. He was for a while a decent off the ball 3-point shooter. You know, we saw at the end of games it was better of him kind of running around getting screens to get open, but his turnover rate is at a career low. If he keeps getting that down, he could really kind of push himself into at least a thought of being a point guard the way James Harden did. You know, the one knock to Vic coming in this season why he couldn't play point guard was his turnovers per game. I mean, he was, you know, at 3.2 and 2.8. I guess now he's at 2.9 this season, which is, I guess, higher than last season. But it also seems like his turnover percentage is down. You look at a turnover percentage per 100 possessions. I'm going to pull that up real quick. Per 100 possessions, Vic is a career low in turnovers at 3.4. Obviously, usage rate is up, so his turnovers are a little bit up. But if he can get down that turnover percentage to, like, somewhere in the 2-3 range, he could be the Pacers' point guard in two seasons. Now, I think Collison remains the point guard next year. Collison's turnovers per game are ridiculous. I mean, he is, when he comes back, he's so missed because he was one of the 10 best offensive point guards before he got hurt. So he's been missed so much by this team, and it's good to see them win without him. You know, they struggled Monday and Wednesday, but they've turned it around. And I think they have a real shot at winning Monday against the Bucks. But getting these two wins on the weekends help because it helps you with tiebreakers and it helps, you know, you're beating the best team. The Pacers kind of, I guess, play to their opponents almost at times, it feels like. But the last thing I want to talk about is the end of game. Obviously, it seems like if the Pacers had a competent bench in the fourth quarter, they could have extended their, I think, 13-point lead going, or I think they had a 15-point lead, actually, excuse me, a 15-point lead going into the fourth quarter. That got wiped out, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes. I know Vic came in with about 10 minutes left because they were trying to hold them out a little longer, but they couldn't. Yet, in the end of games, they continued to be clutch. You know, we've seen it Friday. Vic was clutch. I know Monday and Wednesday they weren't as clutch, and I guess they're not clutch every game. But in games against teams that they need to beat, like playoff teams, like the Bucks and the Wizards, it's good to see this team actually be, you know, efficient in the end of games. You know, they did it against Boston earlier in the year, done against Denver. But it was weird this game because the pick and roll for Vic wasn't really working. You know, Turner came out to set screens, and teams are starting to kind of just double Vic and force him to pass the ball to Turner, who they just said, fine, Turner, you shoot the ball because, you know, we get the mismatch on Vic. He's going to score every time, and we don't want that, which is a smart move. But the Pacers countered a little bit. They let Joseph bring the ball up instead of letting Vic bring the ball up. They did a little bit of different things. I think a team that has a, you know, Bradley Beal is a bigger player than Vic, so I think it was a bad matchup for him. But I think teams that have, you know, not as good a defensive guard out there, it won't really matter. You know, you'll see the Vic pick and roll end of game kind of thing continue to work. I think this time it just didn't. But I want to give a shout out really quick to Thad Young, who played terrible most of the game. 0-for-5. He was in foul trouble the first half, but he came with a huge steal. I believe it was a 3-2-point game, something like that. And it looked like, you know, Yanahimi had position on him, was going to score, but then Thad kind of does that great thing he always does, gets his hand in the ball and knocked it out and made a play which sort of flipped the momentum, because it seemed like the Pacers were very close to giving up this game and giving up the momentum, but every time it seemed like that, they sort of pulled it back. And then obviously the incredible defense by Corey Joseph and Vic. 96-95, Bradley Beal goes to the rim, and Vic stops him. Vic just gets his hand in the way, gets in the way of Beal, stops him. That was incredible. And then Joseph's stop on Beal, where Beal kind of get to the rim, try to separate him, and Joseph kept his hand in the face. That was incredible. Those were really three plays I thought, you know, defined this game and really flipped the game in the Pacers, you know, towards the Pacers, because it seemed like they were going to lose this game. I kept getting nervous, you know, they're going to blow this game because their bench was terrible and their starters are getting drained and all that stuff. But they pulled it out, and now they got to go play the Bucks on Monday. That's tonight, version of this podcast on Monday. A couple big things to know for that Bucks game. One, the Bucks are actually playing on, well, I'm recording this on a Sunday night, are playing right now. They have a less turnaround than the Pacers, so both teams run back-to-backs. But the Bucks started a game at 8 o'clock, the Pacers 6. You know, it's brutal for the Milwaukee, who has to then travel to Indiana after playing probably games at 10 o'clock against the Sixers. Also a playoff team, so they're going to probably be a tough game. It's not going to be some cakewalk, whatever. So it's a real opportunity for the Pacers to steal a back-to-back, you know, a scheduled loss, because it really is a scheduled loss, but then it's not because the Bucks are also on a back-to-back, so it negates that. It's a real opportunity to steal a win and steal the season series against the Bucks. I believe Caitlin Cooper tweeted this out. The Pacers, no matter what, will own the tiebreaker against the Bucks because they'll tie in overall games played at 2-2 if they lose on Monday, and they have a better division record, and there's no way to lose that. So no matter what, they'll have the tiebreaker, but every win is important. The Pacers win Monday, and the Cavs lose. I believe the Pacers are all of a sudden the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, which is huge. You know, I said 50 wins is the 3 seed before, after the All-Star break, as we were kind of heading into this last stretch. I think it might be 48 now. The Cavs, you know, I don't think any of their problems were solved. I think they're still dealing with some chemistry issues. I think it's less hostile than it was before the All-Star break, but it's different. So I don't think the Cavs care about getting a top 4 seed, maybe even top 3 seed. They have LeBron. So the Pacers can basically steal the 3 seed because the Cavs don't care and the Wizards are incompetent and they're better than them and there's no other team. You know, there's the Sixers and Bucks, but the Pacers are as good as those teams. It's the Cavs I'm worried about. But if they can steal the 3 seed, let's just imagine this scenario real quick. The Pacers are the 3, the Celtics are the 2, Toronto 1, let's say Cleveland are the 4 or 5, whatever, doesn't matter. And let's say they play like the Bucks as a 6 or Philly as a 6. Probably Philly, the way Philly's been playing. You know, the Pacers can beat Philly in the first round. So then they have a 2-3 matchup against Boston, who is a young team just like them. Basically the only veterans, you know, they have Al Horford and they have Kyrie, but the Pacers play the Celtics tough, and the Celtics have lots of young players, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum never played in the playoffs. So there's a chance they can steal that series. And all of a sudden, you're maybe looking at a 3-seed, a Pacer team in the conference finals, and if Cleveland is the 4-seed, Cleveland plays Toronto and wins, you're looking at a 3-4 matchup in the conference finals between the Pacers and the Cavs, with the Pacers having home court advantage and have beat the Cavs 3 out of 4 times this season. That probably still means the Pacers don't win the series, but you never know. I'm saying there is a unique path for the Pacers to guide their way to the conference finals. I don't want to say they'll be in the NBA finals, but getting the 3-seed is the first step. I thought it'd take 50 wins. I think it's probably 48 now. But we'll see. Like I said, next game for the Pacers coming up is against the Bucks. Make sure to watch that one. Tony and I will be back on Tuesday to do a full week preview and week decompress from the week before. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk about 3 straight Pacer wins. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me on Twitter at FriedmanAdam5 and my co-host Tony East on Twitter at TEastMBA. We are also now on Dash Radio, 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time, 6 to 7 Eastern Time. I don't know why I said the Central Time. That was dumb. But we're on Dash Radio now. You can find us also anywhere you can listen to podcasts, but we're going to put our weekly show on that one. Check us out there. As always, this has been the Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.